following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Keyes, again. Welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. We have another great podcast for you, and everything's real, nothing made up, unlike some politicians. We have some Union women's hockey and RPI women's hockey to talk about. The ECAC hockey women held their video conference call Monday, and we'll have some sound from that with Tony Macy, the new Union head coach, and then Brian Vines, the RPI head coach. So we'll have some good stuff from that. Adam Schindler, my Gazette colleague, joins me for his weekly appearance to talk college football. Union coming off a close victory over SUNY Maritime, and UAlbany losing to Idaho in the rematch of the FCS quarterfinal playoff game last year. So Adam will talk about that and preview Union's game Friday night at Springfield. And then Freddie Coleman, our good friend from ESPN Radio, will join us. We'll talk of a variety of sports topics. So Freddie's always engaging and love having him on the show, one of my good friends. So looking forward to talking with Freddie Coleman. So coming up, we'll talk some ECAC women's hockey, Union College, and RPI in particular. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Stay informed with the Daily Gazette's e-edition. Download our app, sign up to receive our newsletters, and enjoy exclusive reader rewards when you join our growing community today. Head over to www.dailygazette.com to check out our membership plans. And remember, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette.
Hi, this is Matt Dubray, the play-by-play voice of Union College Hockey. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. On Monday, it was the ECAC Hockey Women's video conference call. We had a chance to talk to all 12 coaches in the conference, chance to catch up and get ready for their season. Some teams do play on Saturday some exhibition games, including RPI, the host Windsor at Houston Fieldhouse on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Union doesn't get underway until next weekend. They'll start the regular season right away with a pair of games at Robert Morris. Of course, they have a new coach in Tony Macy. The preseason coaches poll was released on Monday, and a bit of a tight battle at the top. Clarkson edged out Colgate for the top spot. Clarkson getting 113 points and 6 first place votes. Colgate, the defending regular season and tournament champion, earned 109 points, also with 6 first place votes. Cornell was in third with 2 first place votes and 103 points. St. Lawrence got the other first place vote and earned 92 points. Quinnipiac was picked 5th with 82 points, followed by number 6 Yale at 69 points. Princeton picked 7th with 65 points. Brown picked 8th with 47 points. RPI picked with 35 points for 9th. Harvard in 10th with 27 points. Dartmouth 11th with 23 points. And Union last with 18 points. Of course, the Garnet Chargers coming off a season, which they lost their final 13 games of the season, which included the ECAC hockey tournament loss to Yale, Union's first appearance in the postseason. Of course, last year was the first year that the conference took all 12 women's teams. That has been the format in the men's tournament since 2003. Of course, Union went through some changes in the offseason. Josh Skiba left the head coaching position to take an assistant coaching job with the New York team in the Professional Women's Hockey League. And Union hired Clarkson associate head coach Tony Macy to take over the program. Tony is respected around the ECAC hockey. He's part of a couple of NCAA titles with the Clarkson women's team. So we had a chance to talk with Tony during the conference call, and he updated us on how things are going. And, of course, yeah, Tony got in here as soon as he was hired. He was on the recruiting trail. We didn't get a chance to talk with him at the introductory press conference until about August. He was hired July 31st. So we had a chance to finally talk with Tony about a month ago at an introductory press conference. And I know Union will be having its media day for both the men's and women's hockey teams sometime next week, so we'll get some more sound out of that. And so we had a chance, like I said, I had a chance to talk to Tony Macy, and I asked a few questions during the conference call. So here is what Tony Macy had to say.
Yeah, so I've been able to get on the ice with the girls here a little bit in our preseason skates. So, you know, they're excited. I think that they're working hard. I think one of the things that we're focusing on is just playing with a little bit more structure and trying to play with a little bit more speed. I think that if we can do that, then, you know, maybe we can surprise some teams along the way.
And you know, obviously have been around the league for a long time, seen success in the league with Clarkson. Coming to Union, besides the opportunity to be a head coach, what drew you to this opportunity at Union? And, you know, what also kept you in the league and made you want to stay at ECAC?
Yeah, well, I think the ECAC is, you know, the strongest league in the country. Obviously, other people can say otherwise, but night in, night out, no matter who you're playing, you know you're going to get a tough game. You know, for myself, being close to New York, that was a big deal for me. I like being in New York, especially with my wife. So she's looking at moving down this way. But you know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, yes, I've seen success at Clarkson. Matt runs a great program. He was able to bring me in, and you know, very fortunate to have gone through that, learned from him, and learned way more than I could ever have thought. So just being able to take some of that knowledge that he's given me and what I've learned and bring it here. And then you know, we've got a new rink coming next year, so that's a massive increase for us. You know, love Mesa Arena here, but you know, the new rink's going to have a lot of good amenities, a lot of things right there at the rink that the players are going to be able to utilize that, you know, I've seen in other rinks. So we'll be catching up when it comes to the rink stuff. And then at the same time, like, I think that the community itself down here, really good people, great campus community, beautiful campus. The academics and athletics definitely merge well. So that was one of the biggest draws here.
Great. Ken?
Tony, obviously coaches and players really don't pay attention to the poll, but you guys are picked last. Is that a motivation for this team to prove that the coaches were wrong in picking this team last?
You can look at it that way. I look at it as a challenge every day to just keep getting better. You know, our job here isn't to look too far ahead. You know, we're not looking months down the road. We got to be looking at, you know, what's the next day hold and what's in front of us. If we do that, we'll put ourselves in probably a better situation. But if we start looking outside and the outside things coming in, then, you know, we can let those things consume us. So we're going to be looking at the day-to-day and just trying to get better every day.
How has the, you took the just job just over a month ago. I mean, obviously the adjustment, trying to get to know the players. I mean, how has that, getting to know them, the relationship building, how has that been going so far?
It's been great. Like I said, we've been on the ice a little bit. We've done some stuff off the ice as well. Just getting to know each other. You know, my staff slowly starting to fill out here as well. So, you know, it's a quick turnaround, but everybody here is just ready to work. You know, that's the big thing. I think that there are definitely some times where we've been working on relationship building. That's part of what we're looking at in our core values and what the players want. So we're going to be definitely staying on track with that stuff.
So you mentioned the staff. Have you hired anybody else for assistance?
Right now, I've got Sean Skelly coming from Adrian. Know Sean for a long time. He's going to do a great job with the recruiting side of things, especially in the skills stuff as well on ice. Comes from a very winning pedigree as well. So, you know, I think that he'll fit right in. And then I do have somebody else coming in, just waiting on some background checks through HR as that goes. So once those come out, then we'll filter those out as well through social media.
Have captains been named yet?
Look for those probably in the next 24 hours here, Ken.
Okay. I mean, is this team ready? I mean, obviously, this team ready to go?
Yeah, that's my job. That's what my hope is, right? My job to try and get them going, and I think they're doing a really good job of, you know, coming in, working hard. They're doing a great job of listening and taking what we're telling them and applying it. So that's all I can ask for them. And, you know, obviously, once we get to the ice and play against somebody other than ourselves, then we'll really find out.
Hey, Tony, what's it been like having someone like Josh Howji there that you knew, you've already worked with? You know, talk to what it's been like to have him there with you.
Yeah, Josh has been great. He's been a huge help for all the little day-to-day stuff. You know, I've been busy, so I get to see him, and I'm over at his office probably a little bit more than maybe I'm even at mine, just trying to go through the day-to-day things and, you know, what was expected here. You know, getting some actual paperwork things done that might be new, but he's helped with the transition a ton. Obviously knows the landscape well. He's able to get me out around on a tour, so I did a tour with Josh and his two boys, and you know, his wife's been awesome as well, Allison. You know, I can't thank them enough for, you know, the hospitality that they've had coming in.
Anyone have other questions for Coach? Bob, go ahead.
Hey, Tony, talk about what Joe Marsh meant to you as a mentor.
Yeah, so obviously I had Joe for 5 years, and as much as people, you know, talk about Joe and his background in the game and the history of him, it doesn't speak to, like, Joe as a person. Joe's a great person. He always has players, you know, best interest at heart. He's always goes out of the way to say hi, calls, congratulate, those types of things. He's just been, you know, really good in that sense.
He's not lost on anyone, but you also have a few matchups that really will give you some good tests, Penn State coming in and St. Cloud coming in. How important is that kind of for you for a measuring stick, not only for the season, but just overall to have some teams that, you know, will be around the national rankings coming into your building?
Yeah, it's always good to get, you know, to play those teams. Obviously, we have quite a few in our league that do the same thing. But to get different competitions, always good. You get to kind of, you know, see where you're at nationally, as well as, you know, I think it's good to just play other opponents. You know, we get to play people in our league twice at different times during the year. Here we get to play them back to back, a little bit different than what our league does, right? So, you know, you get to see them one night, and then you got to adjust whether it be you win or you lose and try and beat them again the next night.
All right, I'll ask the last question that kind of leads into our next coach who just jumped on, but the camaraderie of the coaches in this league has, you know, has really developed into something that represents what the league is. Coming from Clarkson, one, talk a little bit about what, you know, Matt has done to help you with your career and kind of to push you to this part. And then also, you know, Coach Wells was on before saying you were his first call, you know, as a recruiting, and he said you can shoot. He could shoot the puck from, what did he say, from St. Lawrence to Union, he could shoot the puck. So he had some good things to say about you too. But just, you know, specifically about Clarkson and about Coach DeRozier, but in general, the camaraderie of this league, you know, how much support you have from all the coaches, what does that mean?
Oh, I think that means a lot. You know what, we've been out recruiting. So, you know, everybody that you come around, hey, awesome to see that you're still around. Congrats on the new job, like from every coach that, in the league, whether it be head coaches or assistants. You know, Wellesley helped me get to the North Country back in the day. So that's kind of stuck with it. And then, you know, Matt's really been huge for my growth. You know, he brought me into Clarkson that was rolling pretty good, and we were able to win right away. So, you know, he just held me along the way and able to show me, like, exactly what it looks like to be the right person and the right head coach.
Awesome.
Up next is RPI Women's Head Coach Brian Vines. He's been the head coach of the Engineers since June of 2017. He was with the men's team as an assistant coach before that. Vines got at the Engineers to a ninth place finish last year. Suffered a tough 1-0 loss to Brown in the first round of the ECAC hockey tournament. He's going to be without goaltender Amanda Rampato, who graduated last year. So during the conference call, we talked to Vines, and unfortunately, a little stupid me missed recording, hit the recording button, so I didn't get much of what Brian had to say, and unfortunately some technical difficulties with the ECAC Hockey's recording of the conference call yesterday prevents me from getting much sound. I do have some sound, and the sound will starting with Brian. I had asked him about facing Tony Macy, the new head coach of Union.
I think he brings that that winning pedigree, you know, over to Union, and I know his team will be extremely well prepared and disciplined, and they'll play hard. You know, I fully expect that, but that's what we see, you know, from every team every weekend in our league. But it was awesome to see him, you know, move up and get that position at Union, and it'll be really fun to see him across the way here in a couple months.
One last question. Obviously, you've been an assistant coach with the men's team, the head coach with the women's team. You've been to Messerink numerous times. The final year of Messerink for Union. Is there any one particular memory that stands out for you coaching at Union against Union at Mesa?
Mesa, jeez. Yeah, a lot of really intense physical games. Nothing jumps off the top of my mind, but just the fans. I mean, it rocks in there. When we're there with the women's team, I know when I was with the men's team as well, and they were on their way to a national championship game, or national title that one year. I can't remember which year that was, but the intensity, the fan rivalry, I think is you know, the best memories I take from the rivalry between our two schools.
We go from the ice rink to the gridiron. Adam Schinder, my Gazette colleague, will talk area college football. We'll look back at Union's win over SUNY Maritime and UAlbany's loss to Idaho. So stay tuned here on the Parting Shots podcast.
Hockey's elite teams, coaches, and student athletes. ECAC Hockey, 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Union College head football coach John Drock. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with the Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and it's our week look at the area college football with the Gazette's Adam Schinder. Adam, mixed results last Saturday. Let's begin with the good news, I guess. The Union College getting its first win of the season, but not easy for John Drock to get his first victory as the head coach of the Garnet Chargers.
Yeah, if you had told me 10 minutes into this game that Union was going to be, you know, fighting tooth and nail down to the last minute, I would not have believed you. But after a very good start, things got very, very difficult. Good sign is for the mental toughness of this team, they were able to bounce back from that, had a couple of good defensive stands and a great drive to pull out the 18-15 win over SUNY Maritime.
Yeah, I caught the last couple minutes of the game, and the defense really stood out there at making that big stop to seal the victory.
Yeah, for a lot of this game, Union had seemed content to just kind of bend but don't break. defensively, and they'd a lot of few long drives. They'd a lot of drives where they give up two or three first downs, then make the stop. Didn't allow a play longer than 19 yards all afternoon, but a big sequence. And after Steven Stassi, the quarterback for SUNY Maritime, had gotten away from him, finally fourth down, Mitchell Bishop and Charlie Johnson got after it, got a sack that pretty much ended it. And yeah, big play confidence wise for a Union team that needed it going into a tough week.
Yeah, Union jumped out to 11-0 lead in the first quarter. As you said, it seems like it was going to be an easy game. And what happened after that?
Yeah, first two drives were really, really good. First drive, they have an early fourth down conversion, a couple of nice runs, a beautiful little design on the first play of the game for a 30-yard pass to Jonathan Anderson, and then a nice touchdown pass to Robbie Tolbert caps it off. Then a big run from Michael Fiore starts the second drive. They're very quickly down inside the 10. They can't cash it into a touchdown, kick the field goal. They're up 11-0, and then they just stalled. Couldn't really get a consistent running game going. Patch Flanagan was under a little bit of pressure on a few occasions, and then they just kept rolling out the offense on fourth down, and they could not convert, which also hurt them field position-wise. They were giving SUNY Maritime a lot of plus field position in this game, and ended up biting them as SUNY Maritime came back in the second and third quarters. But just was not consistent on offense, which has been the problem for this team through 2 weeks.
Yeah, down 15-11 after three quarters, but then Cam Fries with a one-yard touchdown pass from Patch Flanagan. And a drive that took just a little over 7 minutes to make it 18-15.
Yeah, this was a gut check drive and the best drive we've seen out of Patch Flanagan in that kind of situation. One thing, they had not really, through the first three quarters, gotten the quarterback run game going at all. They put the ball in his hands a little bit more on that final drive. He had a big scramble to pick up a key fourth down on that drive. A couple of nice runs, again, by Fiore, who got his legs going late in that game. And then Cam Fries, second career catch. He was a converted backup quarterback. Union's got about 7 quarterbacks on this roster. So there was space. He's a bigger guy, and yeah, popped a little. Everyone thought they were running it with first and goal at the 1, and he threw out a little play action pass. Big moment for him. And Union's not a team that in the last several years has used tight ends very much at all in this offense, so they're usually always open. And nice to see him make a play like that.
What was the reaction like at the end of the game for Coach Drock getting his first win?
They were excited. It wasn't you can make a measured difference between John Drock's energy and John Poppy's energy a year ago. Poppy was someone who was very demonstrative, bouncing all over the sideline, slapping helmets. This was excited, but not to say John Poppy was unprofessional, but very professionally. All right, we won one, we're excited, but let's move on to the next week.
Looking at the stats in this game, pretty evenly matched. Maritime had 249 yards total yards. Union had 272. First downs, Maritime 19-18 over Union. So it seemed like just a pretty even game.
Yeah, it was. Union was the better team. They did not play well in the second and third quarters. Credit to SUNY Maritime. They really made some adjustments on defense because it really looked like Union was going to just rip through them early. The SUNY Maritime offense was very deliberate. They didn't get a play longer than 19 yards. This was not a team. Union's defense was not exposed in any way. They just stayed on the field a lot, and that's something that is going to be really important for them this week.
Yeah, we'll talk about it just a second, but your thoughts on Patch Flanagan as the quarterback? 2 games in, and I know you've only seen him once with the home game. What are your thoughts?
He's a tough quarterback. He's got a good connection with these receivers. Hasn't been super consistent yet, and has put the ball at risk maybe a few too many times. They've turned the ball over a handful of times through 2 games, but there's a lot you like. He's shown a lot in the run game. When they've been able to get read option stuff and quarterback run working, that's really been some of the best moments this offense has had through 2 weeks.
Well, Union begins a tough schedule here. 3 road games in a row starting Friday night at Springfield.
Oh, Springfield. This is the test that they face once a year.
And I should say Springfield, Massachusetts, not Springfield, Ohio.
it's a test that they face once a year that is unlike anything. Springfield is the only flexbone triple option team they'll see in their regular season schedule. Facing this team is not fun. To put it out, Springfield's played two games. They have run for almost 1,000 yards. They barely throw the ball. It is playing a battering ram. You have to go out there and be prepared to have the guys run into you 50, 60, 70 times, and you have to be able to put them behind the sticks, force them into situations where they cannot pop a play action pass over you or have an easy third and fourth down conversion.
Of course, last year, Union, I think it was a Friday night game at Frank Bailey Field. Union won 34-7. Union's won the last five meetings against Springfield.
Oh, they've shown a lot of success against this team recently, and even though this is a new coaching staff, most of these guys on this team have played Springfield a bunch. They know what they have to do. And yeah, the big thing last year, if you think about allowing 150 rushing yards in a football sense, that doesn't seem particularly great. But if you are limiting Springfield to 150 yards, they're not throwing the ball.
Yeah,
they're not doing all that much. You know, I'll put it another way. Springfield last week played Husson. They won 76-7.
Ouch.
They ran for 560 yards. You cannot get into a game like that. They're going to throw 6, 7, 8, 9 different ball carriers. It is a game that tests your legs. And if you're in it, if you win a game like this, it's always a good sign because it shows you are a physical, tough team. Really, the best thing you can do is score points, get ahead to force them into situations where Springfield has to try and pull things out because they're very happy to go 14 plays, 65 yards, touchdown, take 8 minutes off the clock. And if you force them to throw the ball, they are in trouble. And they've always been in trouble. And if you keep the ball, if you run consistent 10, 12, 14 play drives on offense, you keep them off the field, you keep your defense fresher.
You had a chance, we're taping this on Wednesday, so you had a chance to go to the media availability on Wednesday to talk with Union. What was the mood like over there? What did John Drock have to say?
Yeah, they're in a good mood. They're feeling better, you know, this week than they were last week. You know, it wasn't so much, you know, they mentioned the, you know, the win over SUNY Maritime wasn't as much a sense of relief as a benchmark that they are, all right, we're making the improvements we need to. You know, they're not, you know, outwardly talking about, you know, style points from a win. But this is a week where they know, short week, they're putting an extra focus on conditioning, extra focus on, you know, you have to basically get your scout team really ready. They're, you know, your scout team does things very differently for Springfield week than they do just about any other time. You're putting wide receivers out at quarterback to make sure you're ready to deal with that kind of speed. So they're in a good mood, but they are steeling themselves for a tough Friday night in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, let's go over to UAlbany and the return to the Kibbe Dome at Idaho did not go as well as it did the last year in the postseason. Idaho jumped out to a 27-3 halftime lead and cruised to a 41-13 victory over the Great Danes. Not surprised?
No, I am not surprised that Idaho won the game. I'm not surprised they won the game comfortably. I'm a little surprised it was that comfortably. But three games in, if this UAlbany team is not going to establish the running game, and they have not through 3 weeks, they need to be able to do that to get some pressure off of Miles Burkett. And then the defense has really struggled to slow down opposing running games. Now, they've faced, especially the last 2 weeks, they faced an FBS West Virginia team and an Idaho team that is one of the top five FCS teams in the country. The toughest part of their schedule in many ways might be out of the way with those 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were outscored 90-27 the last two games. Of course, as you mentioned, West Virginia, they gave up 49 against, so that's not a really much of a surprise. But what do you think they had to do to improve the defense?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is it, usually when you're allowing the chunks you are in the running game, it's run fits, so it's your defensive front and it's tackling. And they've tackled fairly well, but they're tackling further downfield than they like to be. And was the big issue 2 years ago when they really struggled against the run, is you're just leaving your linebackers exposed. Their defensive front was so good last year that that they were able to kind of play the optimal version of Greg Gattuso football, and that's what they've been able to do when they've succeeded against the run in the past. So yeah, it's really just using the bye week they have this week to get healthy, get guys on the right side, but yeah, figure out how you're fitting at the point of attack, and make sure that your linebackers and your safeties aren't making first contact 7 yards downfield.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the bye week. You know, get the defense back in order. Of course, they open up Colonial Athletic Association play next Saturday when they host the Maine Black Bears. So, how important is it to get ready for that conference game?
Yeah, I mean, this is the CAA is as tough a league as there is in FCS, and they have to be ready. One good thing, Ozzie Hutchinson, their left tackle, who's one of the best offensive linemen in all of FCS. He's missed the last 2 weeks with a blue foot injury. So hopefully he's back for them, for Maine. Having your starting left tackle, especially that level of left tackle, back and healthy, that's going to help a lot. And then remember, this team's last year was spectacular at home, especially in conference play. So if you get them back, and this is the game that they need coming off a bye week to set the tone for the rest of the season. Yeah.
Well, you and I are both from the Philly area. Your thoughts about the Eagles' choke job on Monday night against the Falcons?
I lost a lot of sleep. Let's just put it that way.
Well, my son was not happy. He was hollering all the way up to when he went to bed on Monday night. It was not a fun night at the Schott household. But, well, Adam, we'll do this again next week, and I appreciate you coming in for a few minutes.
No problem.
All right, that's Adam Schindler. Coming up, ESPN Radio's Freddie Coleman, our good friend. He's going to talk about a variety of sports topics. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast. Hey, pro football fans, it's time again to match wits with other pro football fans and win a prize by playing the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest. To play, go to dailygazetteprofootball.upickem.net and make your picks before the first game kicks off each week. If you have the most weekly points, you win a $100 Hannaford gift card. Play the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest today. The Daily Gazette has some great subscription deals happening. Sign up today at www.dailygazette.com. And as always, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette.
Hi, this is Union Men's Hockey alum Charlie Moxham. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. So my next guest has been a regular on this podcast for years, and I appreciate him always when he comes on the podcast. He's the co-host of Freddie and Harry at 3 to 7 on weekdays on ESPN Radio. It's our good friend Freddie Coleman. Freddie, how are things?
I'm good, brother Ken. How's everything with you, my man?
Everything's good, brother Freddie. I can't wait to talk to you. I always enjoy our conversations. And first of all, congratulations on 20 years at ESPN Radio. What has the ride been like?
Oh, completely smoke and mirrors. There's no doubt about that. I've been fooling people for 20 plus years trying to make that happen. But I know exactly how blessed I am to have been a part of a company as worthwhile and as wonderful as ESPN and ESPN Radio, part of the Disney family. And whatever bowls and arrows we get from people, there are plenty of people that would trade places with me any day of the week. And the opportunity to have worked for them for 20 years when it's hard to last 20 minutes in our business or even 20 seconds, I know exactly how blessed and fortunate I have a chance to be a part of this company, do what I love to do, and hope I can do it for another 20 years. Yeah, we'll wait and see.
Of course, I remember you back in the days at Fox Sports 980.
Yeah, how long ago was that? I mean, you think about that, having the chance to work with John Tobin and doing that afternoon show back then. And I always, always thank the people that were in charge of Fox Sports 980. They also own the Classic Rock 106.5 Pix FM. So I'm really grateful that they gave us an opportunity in terms of being radio station owners to allow us to do something like that and take a chance on us. And they gave us a chance to do an afternoon show in the early part of 2004 after we had our trial period in the summer of 2003, and that really kind of set the stage for what I've been able to accomplish and where I am right now.
Yeah. Well, let's tackle some topics here. First of all, we had a nuclear Woj bomb on earlier this week when Adrian Wojnarowski, the insider, NBA insider for ESPN, decided he's going to be the general manager of the St. Bonaventure men's basketball team. How shocking was that Woj bomb this week? Well,
I don't know if shock's the word for it, Ken. I mean, I think we have to go beyond that word when it comes to shock, because we're talking about an insider that is among the best insiders that the sports world has ever seen, no matter what sport that is. And when you can have an Adam Schefter of ESPN, a Jeff Passan of ESPN, sharing their thoughts on the kind of quality person that Adrian Wojnarowski is always going to be. And I echo those sentiments because I've had more than a couple of interactions with him and conversations with him. He is as genuine as you want anybody to be, and he'll always be there to help somebody. And this was his way of giving back to his alma mater when it comes to St. Bonaventure, a place that means so much to him. And especially when you believe that you can impact young people's lives and make things better and make things better for your university, only good is going to come out of that as far as I'm concerned. So once the shock wore off and the initial blast happened, all of a sudden I had a chance to think about, say, wow, this gentleman is willing to say, you know what, I love what I do, but this is more of my passion. I need to make sure I'm going to be fulfilled and I'm going to fulfill my university. So a lot of people are giving him his plaudits and his flowers because Adrian Wojnarowski clearly deserves that professionally and personally as well.
Of course, we're seeing a lot more of these college institutions hiring general managers for these programs because you have the NIL going on, the name, image, and likeness. And it seems like maybe the athletic directors and the coaches don't want to deal with this. And they say, give it to somebody else. Let them handle all this stuff.
It's not a bad idea because what's the old line? You can fear what you don't know. And if you don't know if you can get a grasp on something like that, then it is in your best interest to bring in somebody that can really understand that and have a handle on it. And they can just be committed to that. This way you don't have four or five different people trying to serve that one master that they may not have a grasp. And in terms of how to make sure it's maintained and regulated to the specifications, that's going to help your university. And if anybody knows about salary cap and dealing with that kind of thing, it's going to be a guy that understands that all the NBA teams and NBA general managers that he had conversations over the years. So it may have been, there's still steps behind, Ken, when it comes to NIL and the transfer portal, when it comes to big-time college athletics, but enough universities are saying, okay, let's not try to bully our way through. Let's bring in somebody that we know can have an idea what's going on. And this way, we're not really setting ourselves back in the new changing landscape of college athletics.
Well, I, of course, cover college hockey, and I follow the junior hockey with, you know, a lot of these kids that are committing to college. In the junior hockey ranks, both here in the United States and Canada, they make trades. So are we maybe on the verge one of these days of college teams making trades with these general managers now coming on board?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen because I think we got the trade market going on called the transfer portal that kids are trading and going someplace else. And people don't realize long before all this Wild West situation happened in college athletics, scholarships are basically a renewal situation. Anytime you heard about somebody getting a scholarship offer or getting a scholarship through university, that didn't mean it was a full four-year ride because the coach and the athletic program, they could take away your scholarship or say, you know, we believe that we can give your scholarship to somebody else. So it was a constant renewal. People don't realize the scouts were kind of at least with an option to buy when you think about it in the old days. So now that has really shifted more than ever before, it's really kind of a one-year thing that you're hoping that will be a two-year or a three-year or a four-year. Not so much in the mid-major level, not so much in the Division II level where they can do those kind of things, but the big-time college level, you have to re-recruit more than ever before. And a big part of that is financially, what is it going to be an investment when it comes to student-athletes, no matter what sport they play, no matter if they're male or female?
Yeah. Well, let's move over to the NFL. And, of course, the big story of last Thursday, Tua Tagovailoa suffered another concussion, his third that we know of. And a lot of people around the league are calling for him to retire. The landscape is different because, you know, when you and I were growing up watching the NFL, you know, we never talked about concussions. They were just told, shake it off, give them some smelling salts, they'd be back in the game. But it's a different world here in the NFL. I mean, should Tua consider retirement?
He should consider it, but here's the thing I want people to consider. This should be his decision, that whenever the tests come back and if they show that he can be cleared to play football, then that decision should be Tua Tagovailoa's. Now, if they tell him, look, if you go back out there, the risk is even greater, then he's really got to weigh that. And I know he loves to play football, but I'm also not in the business of telling grown people what to do when this is their life. And if Tua Tagovailoa is going to be back out there, and my gut tells me, Ken, that he is going to want to play football again, and if he's cleared any kind of battery and baseline attest. That's what he is going to do. He's got to do a better job protecting himself. If you know you had these kind of concussions that we know of, you cannot try to make a play leading head first. That makes absolutely no sense to me. And I know people don't want to hear that, but let's keep it human here. If you know you have those situations, you got to get down quicker. You got to slide quicker. You got to protect yourself a lot better, because you're the one quarterback in the NFL that is in the most high-risk category because of previous events that have happened to you involving concussions, involving trying to protect yourself and not protecting yourself. So not if, but when he's back on the football field, I hope that Tua has enough faculties to say, okay, can I make a play? Yes, but I can't lean and go head first. I can't lean forward and go head forward. I've got to do a better job protecting myself. That means getting out of bounds and putting the play in the football. That's a much better option than having that situation that we saw once again that happened last Thursday night. And all of a sudden people are concerned about not only the welfare of football watch when it comes to Tua Tagovailoa, but the welfare outside of football when it comes to that quarterback of Miami.
Yeah. And we're taping this on Thursday morning, and Thursday night the Jets will be playing their home opener against the New England Patriots. Aaron Rodgers has survived two games so far this season. Didn't get hurt like he did the game one last year. I mean, Jets, I mean, they struggle a little bit against the 49ers, but they look better against the Titans on Sunday. I mean, are the Jets legitimate this year with a healthy Aaron Rodgers?
They are legitimate. I don't know about being an AFC champion in the land of Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, because that's still the gold standard. And the Buffalo Bills, I think, are the second-best team in the AFC. And Josh Allen's playing at that elite quarterback level where he's not trying to do everything. But if you can have that kind of game plan against Tennessee, that game plan can be the best game plan for the New York Jets, because now you got not one but two playmakers in your backfield when you have Breece Hall and also Braylon Allen, the rookie out of Wisconsin. So now Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to go out there and say, if I don't get at least 250, 275 yards, we have no chance to win. He can say, man, I don't need to be the main guy. And I said that, Ken, coming into the season. If Aaron Rodgers has to be your best player week in and week out, that's not going to be good for the New York Jets. Not saying he can't do it, but that's just going to wear him down and wear down the offense. But when he needed to make a play or two in that fourth quarter, in that second half against Tennessee, when the Jets are down 17-7, he made those critical throws, finding Breece Hall on the right side for the touchdown pass, finding Garrett Wilson on the right side in that third down situation to keep that drive going before they got the game-winning touchdown from Braylon Allen running it in. If those kind of things can be there at the Jets, and if the defense can continue to play better, because they're not going to play the San Francisco 49ers every week, the way the 49ers played that Monday night, they're going to beat a lot of teams in the National Football League. If that's going to be the MO, that's going to be the identity of the New York Jets, then this can't be a 10 or 11 win team. I don't think they're going to beat the Buffalo Bills in that division, but they could be a pain in the you know what if that continues to work in the loaded AFC that seems to be getting more and more stacked with teams rising up and rearing their ugly heads to try to be a contender.
Of course, the Jets still having issues with Hassan Reddick, who they acquired from the Philadelphia Eagles. He's holding out for a new deal. Who's winning this battle right now? I mean, it seems like the Jets are, because they haven't given in.
Well, Hassan's winning it right now because finances haven't really crept into his personals, I like to say. But the longer and longer, Ken, he's not playing football, not getting paid, then all of a sudden you have to wonder how much of a business standpoint is he going to stand on. Now, if he's willing to stand on his business and sit out the whole season, then it's going to hurt Hassan Reddick, because the Jets will find a way to have enough playmakers on defense to make that work, especially the offense not setting them back like we've seen the last couple of years when Zach Wilson was their quarterback. But if you're able to find a way to find some common ground, this has to be a meeting of the minds between the New York Jets and Hassan Reddick. And the fact that we have not heard anything leads me to believe, Ken, that something is trying to be worked out in terms of Hassan Reddick being a New York Jet sooner than later. That being said, if you're Hassan Reddick, you got to say to yourself, what's more important? If it's more important to play football, then what are you going to do to take a step back and try to find that middle ground? If football's not that important and you want to sit out for a year, then all of a sudden we got a situation which the Jets are going to say, okay, we've done this without you. We're going to continue to do this without you. And at that point, at a certain point, what rubber is going to meet the road and going to benefit both parties?
Yeah. The other team that plays at MetLife Stadium, the New York Giants, 0-2, and they looked awful in week one against the Vikings, and then they lose their kicker, Gano, to an injury on the opening kickoff on Sunday against Washington. They didn't have they tried their punter to kick an extra point. That failed, and they had to go for two-point conversions and failed all the time. I mean, are the Giants a mess right now?
They're just not a good football team. I don't know if I want to use the word mess. I mean, but we should have expected this, Ken, coming into the season, because nobody thought the New York Giants were going to be any good anyway. And a lot of that centered on the fact that no one believes that Daniel Jones can be enough of a quarterback to raise his level and raise everybody else's level around him. Now, to be fair, he did play better in game two versus the Washington Commanders, but at the same time, playing better should not be the litmus test. That should not be the ceiling. You want your quarterback to play well every week and have everybody rally around that. Daniel Jones is a nice enough guy, but nice guys always aren't going to be the best quarterbacks. You need a toughness about you. You need a fire about you. And I'm not saying he doesn't have it, but I don't think he brings that out in other people to say, hey, our quarterback's battling for us. We need to go out there and help him. Now, Malik Nabers is a star. I think he's going to be a terrific wide receiver. But the problem with that is he has to be the star right now to overcome the potential sins of a coaching staff that seems to not have an idea how to game plan for Daniel Jones, how to game plan against opponents, a defense that's seen Brian Burns, who did not have a tackle in the game this year. That should be physically impossible in the National Football League, the kind of talent that he has. So I'm not going to say they're a mess. I'm just going to say right now, 0-2, their record tells us that that's who they are, not a good football team, which I think a lot of people had to expect going into the season regarding Big Blue.
Are they going to regret letting Saquon Barkley go to the rival Philadelphia Eagles?
They will, but they won't say it out loud because people have said, well, you can't pay a running back. But I'm also a big believer that you can't pay a quarterback $40 million like they gave Daniel Jones that four-year $160 million contract that they can opt out after the season is over. You can't tell me you could not have found a way to pay Daniel Jones and overpay just a little bit, but not find that money to keep a guy that made Daniel Jones a better quarterback when it comes to Saquon Barkley. And I know plenty of people out there say, well, hey, Freddie, he dropped the pass that could have sealed the game for the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason we're in that situation anyway was because of the fact what he's able to do in the running and passing game, and he had three touchdowns opening weekend when they beat the Green Bay Packers. So you can't tell me taking a playmaker away that's going to benefit Jalen Hurts more than your quarterback in the same division is going to be the right move. I know you wanted to pay Daniel Jones, have the confidence in him, but you could have found the money for both of those guys to be together, especially when Saquon Barkley was not looking to leave New York because that's where he wanted to stay. But the Giants made that decision. If they have any kind of regrets, we'll never hear them, but we know deep down inside they're probably thinking we could have made this work and have both of these guys here and been a better football team going forward.
You had to bring up the Barkley drop from Monday night. I'm still not over that Monday night choke job by my Eagles. What did you think about that? I mean, I don't have a problem with that play call. I mean, if Barkley catches the ball, he gets the first down, game's over. I mean,
yeah.
But I go back to the first quarter when Nick Sirianni, in his stubbornness on a 4th-and-3, instead of putting points on the board with a field goal, tries to go for it, doesn't get it. If he kicks a field goal, they're up 9 points. But the Eagles' defense looks awful. It has looked awful for the first two games. I mean, no pressure whatsoever. So I just now they have to go to New Orleans, a team that scored 91 points and just destroyed Dallas in Dallas. I and then they go to Tampa the following Sunday. I see this team 1-3 heading into their bye.
Yeah, because the Saints are white hot right now. When you can have 15 straight possessions scoring with your starting quarterback, I've never heard anything like that in my life. I've never heard anything like that in a top one of football, much less the National Football League at that kind of level. And to be fair, when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm with you. I did not have a problem with play calling. I've heard plenty of these fantasy football geeks or these analytics people say, well, you're running the ball twice. The chances are less that you fumble instead of throwing an interception, having an incompletion. Well, how do you know that? You don't know what's going to happen in a play unless you have a crystal ball that we don't know about. It was the right play call because they scored, almost scored in the touchdown in the same play early in the game. And you're right, Saquon Barkley's wide open. You got to bring the catch in. But if you're the Philadelphia Eagles defense, where's that pass rush going to come from?
Yeah.
And I was very surprised that they were able to sit back and thought that that was going to work, even though Kirk Cousins did not have any timeouts for the Atlanta Falcons. To me, you look at the Jets, they didn't have they lose Jermaine Johnson, even though Will McDonald IV had three sacks. They dialed the pressure to compensate for the fact that they didn't have Jermaine Johnson. And they don't have Hassan Reddick. Why would you not do that to your Philadelphia Eagles? You do not allow Kirk Cousins to sit back there and wait for guys to get open because that protection was going to be there. So it's going to be interesting how they bounce back or try to bounce back because this same team, they're playing with a heck of a lot of confidence. Clint Kubiak's done a great job as an offensive coordinator calling plays. The defense is making plays as well. This is the same team I thought I would see last year that I'm seeing this year, and they're going to be a problem for anybody on this schedule.
Yeah, I picked the Saints to score 50 points and beating my Eagles on Sunday, so I wouldn't be shocked about that. The Eagles defense is not, it's scary bad. So college football, I'm still trying to get used to seeing UCLA and USC in the Big Ten and Stanford and Cal in the ACC. It just doesn't seem right. I'm still trying to get used to this.
I'm still trying to get used to the fact that we don't have also King Saban and Prince Harbaugh on the sidelines as well when it comes to college football in 2024. And you got Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC. We're going to have a new Pac-12 that does not involve USC and UCLA and Oregon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is what happens when you have that money train and it's not going to run out of track anytime soon, Ken, because there's so much money out there from networks and anything connected with college football that people want to be in that big business. I mean, they are a professional league when it comes to college football. They're right up there at the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL because of the money and attention that they generate. And when Oklahoma and Texas went to the SEC, I said, I wonder what's going to be next. When I saw USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12, a conference that they've literally made to go to the Big Ten because of the new money contracts, I said, this is a completely what's going on situation when it comes to college athletics. But they're willing to make those kind of trades to go to a different conference because the money is too great for them to ignore. And the Pac-12 wasn't stepping up. And now the ACC is having retalks when it comes to Clemson and Florida State to keep them there when it comes to finances. This is where we are in big-time college athletics. And like I said, that money train, that's not running out of track anytime soon.
You mentioned Florida State, a team that was undefeated last year, did not get to the college football playoff and complain about it. This year, they're not going to have to worry about the college football playoff. 0-3. How shocking is that?
It's shocking from the standpoint that Florida State, if you got to be careful when you run your mouth and then people keep receipts, because Florida State thought that was going to be the case. But DJ Uiagalelei wasn't that kind of big quarterback with Clemson. He's a nice quarterback, can make some throws here and there, but you need him to make those kind of throws. He couldn't do it. He barely did at Oregon State because they had a running game where he didn't have to do that. But at Florida State in that offense with Mike Norvell, you got to make plays from the quarterback position. But there's no excuse for this team blowing the lead opening day versus Georgia Tech, letting Boston College be a more physical team than you were, and then Memphis showing that they have better athletes on the field than you did. I mean, you're Florida State, the home of Deion Sanders and Terrell Buckley and Peter Warwick and all those guys. You can't allow a team from Memphis to be a better football team or look like a better football team than you. But it goes to show you that each and every year is going to be different. I know it's a cliche, but that is really – Florida State's been the epitome of that, where last year everything was in their favor. They win the ACC championship. They lose Jordan Travis. They win the ACC title game anyway. They get snubbed out of the Final Four, and that was a cost of left. But then they get their brains beaten out by Georgia, and then that had, they've not recovered from that and just carried over to this season.
Well, the baseball season wrapping up. Your Mets, are they going to make the playoffs?
I certainly hope so. I mean, the way they've been able to play ever since they had that come to Jesus meeting when they had that earlier this season. And from that point on, there was an accountability factor that really stepped up. And also Francisco Lindor, he carried this baseball team. Then Pete Alonso joined with him. And Matt Vientos has been terrific for them. They've had the right kind of pitching with that pitching been able to come along. And all of a sudden now, if they can win those kind of softball games, 9-8, but they can win those 3-1 games as well. So even though there's still games to be played, they have a decent enough lead. They may get the second wild card spot. They could overcome the Arizona Diamondbacks. But if they get into the playoffs, they could be a very tough out. For my money, the Philadelphia Phillies are the best team in baseball. I'll take that team over everybody else, but the Dodgers aren't far behind that team with Shohei Ohtani and that bunch. But the Mets can hang with those teams as well, so it's going to be a very interesting playoffs. Can't forget about the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a team that'll fist fight you for 9 innings, so it's going to be a fun playoffs. And if the Mets are around, there could be some pretty creative matchups, some pretty juicy matchups in the playoffs that I can't wait to see in the National League.
Yeah, Phillies, I agree with you, the Phillies, but my Phillies, they scare me because they strike out too much. They struck out 16 times in consecutive games. It just seems like I worry about that because they again come playoff time, it's a different animal, and you can't be trying to hit home runs all the time.
Well, you are who you are when it comes to the Phillies, so they're not going to change their approach, but they may tweak it a little bit because, Ken, to your point, plenty of times you have those advanced scouts, and that was the hallmark of the Yankees teams in the late 90s. People talked about how they were stacked with talent, but their advanced scouting could find weaknesses, and they would just destroy you with your weaknesses. So you're the Philadelphia Phillies. You have to hope that the weaknesses that can hamper you is not going to be part of a full-tilt boogie against you when the playoffs roll around. So what kind of adjustments can they make make, because I've always said this, and it's always true. Good pitching is always going to be good hitting. We've seen that time and time again. You'll have those kind of games. You're out hitting your opponent, but more often than not, if you can out pitch your opponent, you're going to win games. You're going to have a chance to win those kind of games in the playoffs. That is something the Phillies kind of have with the pitching. So even if the hitting is going southward, the pitching should be enough where they can win those kind of games, and the hitting is not going to be there for Philadelphia.
Well, Fred, as always, I enjoy our conversations. You give us a lot, and I appreciate it. And again, happy 20 years of the ESPN Radio. Hopefully, happy another 20 more, and we'll be talking 20 years from now as old men, but we'll be talking.
I certainly hope so, my friend. That'll be a blessing and definitely a wonderful thing if that could be the case. But I just live day by day, and if I can make each day better than the last, I know I'm doing okay.
All right, Freddie, appreciate it as always. Freddie and Harry, 3 to 7 weekdays on ESPN Radio. Freddie Coleman, thanks again.
My pleasure, brother. Kid, talk to you soon. Take care.
You too. That's Freddie Coleman. We'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'Em and Auto Racing Contest in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette sports reporter Will Springstead. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 2 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick a Football Contest was Gloria Hart of Rotterdam Junction with a 14-2 record. Gloria wins a $100 Hannaford gift card. Congratulations, Gloria. The VIP winner was Scott Lucier of Capital Land GMC with a 9-7 record. It was a tough week for most of the VIP pickers. I went 8-8 to go to 21-11. My Gazette colleague Adam Schindler was 6-10. He is also 20-11. We are tied for second place along with Lucier, 2 games behind Scott Hudson of Emmerich's. I'll announce the You Pick 'Em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick 'Em Football banner. The Week 28 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Joe D'Angelo with 40 points. Joe wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Joe. The VIP winner was Dwayne Leach of All Season Equipment with 20 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots Podcast. I want to thank Tony Macy, Brian Vines, Adam Schindler, and Freddie Coleman for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at Schott, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. Views expressed on the Parting Shots Podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots Podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.